This podcast was recorded Thursday, January 3rd at 12:10 p.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like just once, politicians will put something real on the table when making those stupid bets before bowl games, like a new police cruiser, or better yet, how about a new stadium for the other city's sports teams?
I, for one, would like to once again thank the folks at Michigan Radio for those brownies they sent us after my Buckeyes came through once again. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at all those shrewd Ohio politicians who make laws at the State House and in Washington. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, the real price of getting high voter turnout. And Mitt Romney muscles in on John Kasich's anti-Trump territory.
But first, the fight for Ohio House Speaker.
It's been a strange situation since Cliff Rosenberger resigned amid an FBI investigation last year. It took several weeks and 11 votes, if you recall, for Republicans to settle on his replacement, Ryan Smith. And Matt was just to serve out the remainder of the term in 2018.
Yep, and for the next two-year term, the House GOP caucus once again picked Smith when they voted in the final days of 2018. That was essentially the Republican primary, if you will, for the speaker vote. But that does not guarantee Smith will win the job over fellow Republican Larry Householder when the full House votes on the next speaker coming up on Monday. Joining us now is Jeremy Pelzer. He's a political reporter for Cleveland.com. Jeremy, welcome to Snollygoster.
Hey, great to be here.
Good to have you. Before we start here, I do want to play a couple pieces of sound that really get at what we're talking about. Here's Democratic Representative David Leland speaking in mid-December about the speaker race.
Clearly, there's no difference between Smith and Householder. And if Democrats can impact the speaker's race, then the question is, what can we do for the people we represent?
And likewise, here's Democratic Representative Tavia Galonsky.
It would behoove all potential leaders or speakers to be talking with us more directly and not ignoring us.
So that kind of sets the plate for us, Jeremy. Democrats are greatly outnumbered in the House, but still, what are the chances that they could swing the speaker vote by backing Larry Householder instead of Ryan Smith?
For the first time in years, it seems House Democrats have some real power to decide the Speaker of the House and policy going forward for the next 2 years. And this is just because the House Republicans are just so divided over this. And they're, of course, you got to get to 50 and the 99-member House. You got to get 50 votes to become Speaker, a majority. And there's just the two Republicans don't have the votes among their own Republicans, so they have to go to the Democrats now.
Well, why are Republicans so divided over this? What's the big difference between Larry Householder and Ryan Smith?
This is not about ideology. They are almost, Smith and Householder are almost completely the same when it comes to policy. The only main difference is that Householder has said that he would not pass anti-union bills, sort of like right to work and prevailing wage, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's really a matter of just personality and just personal preference and what kind of style of the person you want to be leader.
And what's at stake here, Jeremy, is who controls the campaign fund to help fellow Republican House members or candidates get elected 2 years down the road.
That's and the Speaker of the House has tremendous power over what bills die, what bills get passed. You know, they pick all the committee chairs. And that in turn leads to campaign funding, too. So they have an awful lot of power.
So this is really all about power. It's pure and simple.
It's a pure power play.
Very Snollygoster-ish, if I might say.
I'm shocked to hear that.
So, Jeremy, are there enough Democrats to push Larry Householder over the top?
Well, that depends who you ask. I genuinely think this is going to come down to the last minute. You know, I talked to a bunch of Democrats. And a lot of them said they're going to think about it this weekend. I think a lot of them will still be thinking about it when they walk into the chamber on Monday to cast a vote. And if you ask some people on the Householder side, they say they have enough Democratic votes to win this. But, you know, that remains to be seen. And a lot can happen through Monday.
Are you ready for another late night? Last year, it took 11 votes and Ryan Smith won because on the 11th vote, it only took a plurality instead of a majority. Do you have your coffee ready? Do you have your energy drinks all set up?
Right, yeah, they might have to mainline it, right, with an IV or something, right? And, but it's going to take, it might take a while. And, you know, it's really interesting to see how it works out. There's some talk about, you know, if you don't vote for someone on the first ballot, who will you vote for on the second ballot or eighth ballot? You know, it's also fluid.
Yeah. It just seems to me, two questions. Would Republican members really let the Democrats decide who becomes the next speaker? That's the first question. And two, would Democrats really vote for Larry Householder as speaker?
I've talked to a couple of Democrats who said they would consider it for the simple reason of, well, hey, we're going to have a Republican speaker. And if it's going to be a Republican speaker who at least says, hey, I'm not going to pass right to work or these other labor bills, well, sure. I mean, I'll take that. I'll take that. You know, it's the slightly less evil option in their mind.
Is there anything at stake here other than labor bills? I'm thinking of the heartbeat bill, a bill that has come up in the two most recent legislative sessions. Or is it just about labor?
Oh, I mean, it's about all kinds of other things, too. I mean, there's negotiations going on behind the scenes probably as we're talking right now. I mean, depending on who you talk to, there's, you know, all kinds of deals being offered and talks and negotiations. It's not just about labor. Although, interestingly enough, a lot of labor unions are pressuring Democrats to vote for a householder. They're making calls, working the phones. And so there's a lot going on here. And as for the heartbeat bill and that kind of legislation, no matter who, I mean, you're not going to have a Democrat as speaker, and Republicans are still going to have a supermajority. So whoever's speaker, you're probably going to see a lot of those kind of Republican-sponsored bills still up in front when the next session starts.
The Republicans who are trying to win the speaker vote, they don't have to bargain that much with Democrats. You say Republicans still have that much control over the House.
No, I'm talking about Smith and Householder. Mm-hmm. You know, they're both going to Democrats saying, hey, you should vote for me because blah, blah, blah. And, you know, as to what promises are being made, it's all pure rumor now, so yeah. I don't even want to say that. But, you know, there's a lot of negotiations being done right now. That's certain, and it's done on a very individual, you know, retail politics kind of basis.
There was a piece in the Columbus Dispatch, and I think it's been reported in Texas as well, that, you know, this happened down there in Texas, that this internal fight among Republicans to be over who would be speaker led to some Democrats voting for the eventual speaker, and it led to bipartisanship. Even the Republican speaker named some Democrats to be chairpeople of committees down there. Do you see that kind of thing happening here? Do you see this fight fueling bipartisanship at the state house?
Well, right now it seems really different than Texas, because in Texas they went to the Democratic leader and said, hey, get your caucus to vote for me and I'll give you this stuff. Right now I've seen no sign that Minority Leader Fred Strayhorn here in Ohio has, one, been able to swing a deal like that, or two, even has all of his caucus in line, because, you know, the Democrats, there's different groups of Democrats with different loyalties. And so I've seen the Democrats are going to caucus on Friday. And so I guess we'll see what happens coming out of that, out of their caucus meeting. But right now it seems there's no sign that they're going to vote as a block, and that reduces their power, unlike Texas.
Yeah, in Texas, the margin was between Democrat representatives and Republican, the majority representatives, was much smaller than it is here in Ohio. They don't have the same sway as they had in Texas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, which says something about Ohio. There's more Democrats than Texas.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising to hear that we have a more conservative House than Texas. Jeremy, you do have to cover this on a daily basis, so I don't want to ask you to make a prediction. But if you had to guess right now at this point, who is in a better position, Ryan Smith or Larry Householder?
I would say Smith, just because he just has more Republicans on his side. And, I mean, to win, Householder is going to have to get something like, 20, 24 Democrats, more than half the Democratic caucus to vote for him. And I'm not saying he couldn't do that. Some people are saying he is going to do that. But right now it seems to be Ryan Smith has a slight edge. But I'm not going to put any money on it.
But Fred Strayhorn, the Democrat, will not be speaker. Can you That's a safe bet, would you say?
I've heard some Democrats joke about it. It's ironic because right now he has the most votes of any speaker candidate. You know, if he can get all the Democrats, he'll have more votes than either Householder or Smith.
That
the problem is that's his ceiling.
That would be a good story. I would enjoy covering that story.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm sure Fred will be the most surprised of any of us.
Yeah, he would take the job, I'm sure.
Jeremy
Pelzer is a political reporter for Cleveland.com. Jeremy, great to have you on Snollygoster.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeremy. That record turnout for Ohio's midterm election in November was great for democracy. 56% of registered Ohio voters cast ballots, the highest for a midterm election in Ohio's history. But that turnout could put a damper on a different kind of democracy, the voter-initiated statewide ballot issue.
In the past, these initiatives have brought us casinos, minimum wage increases, and redistricting reform. The threat of ballot initiatives also brought us medical marijuana and payday lending reform. But thanks to all you fired up voters, it's going to be tougher to get such questions on the ballot going forward.
Now, stay with us here because we have to do some math, and math is hard.
It is hard.
You see, the number of signatures you need to get on the ballot is based on the number of ballots cast in the most recent election for governor. So, to get a constitutional amendment before voters, a group must collect signatures of 10% of the total votes cast for governor. Because of the high turnout in November, that number now stands at roughly 443,000. That's a 45% increase over the previous benchmark of 305,000.
Not a minor increase at all, a big increase. Also, FYI, getting a regular old referendum on the ballot, like the Senate Bill 5 referendum a few years ago, requires 6% of the total votes for governor, or about 266,000 signatures.
So what it basically means is you need nearly 10% of Ohio's population to sign a petition to get your issue on the ballot, and it's expensive. A local political consultant told me it costs, on average, $7.50 per valid signature. Multiply that by 443,000, and it's going to cost $3.3 million to get an issue on the ballot. Just to get on the ballot. Nearly $3.5 million to get on the ballot.
Just to get on the ballot, like recreational marijuana, like issue one, issues, the drug issue that last year that failed, $3.3 million to get your clock cleaned at the ballot.
Well, not necessarily.
That's not the goal, yeah. But that's what that's crazy. $3.3 million to get even before voters.
What it means is, in reality, is only the groups with deep pockets, with a lot of money, are going to get on the ballot in these voter initiatives. You're going to see recreational pot. They're looking at 2020 to get it on the Ohio ballot. With presidential turnout, big turnout, they think that's their fertile ground to get recreational pot passed. The only ones who can afford that are big marijuana-growing corporations. It's not going to be your mom and pop activists who want recreational marijuana. It's going to be the big corporations. They're going to write the amendment to benefit them. That's how they're going to get the money to get on the ballot. Same with sports betting, which may come up. It's going to be the big gambling companies that write the constitutional amendment to get that on the ballot, should they choose to do that. They're the only ones that can afford to do this. Common Cause, those groups like that who did redistricting reform, $3.3 million is a lot of money for those types of groups.
That is a lot of money. And I also think this, I assume actually, I haven't talked to any lawmakers or anybody at the State House about this, that this lessens the chance of lawmakers making it harder to make the ballot because voters did it themselves with their great turnout in November. They raised the threshold from 305,000 signatures to 443,000. Now it's a lot harder to get on the ballot. It's 45% harder to get on the ballot. And why would lawmakers, you know, we heard a lot of lawmakers saying, oh, it's too easy to get on the ballot. Outside interest groups can do it. You know, I guess they still could, but it's 45% harder now.
Yeah, because in the lame duck session, they looked at making it harder to get on the ballot. Maybe they saw the numbers and said, you know, we really don't need to take a stand on this. It's going to be tougher to get on the ballot.
With the new year comes reflections on our futures, perhaps the search for a new challenge, maybe a new opportunity. Of course, John Kasich has been looking for that new challenge for a couple years now, and that leads us to our segment, John Kasich GPS.
Governor Kasich, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Thanks, Chuck.
Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
We went to Tulsa instead of where we were going in Colorado.
Each week we track the travels and TV appearances of the outgoing governor and Donald Trump antagonist. Kasich has just 11 days left in office now as Ohio's governor, and he has a teammate on the Never Trump team now, brand new U.S. Senator Mitt Romney of Utah.
Yeah, he just burst onto the scene this week. He wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post. He wrote that President Trump's conduct has not risen to the mantle of the office. Them is fighting words in Washington.
Yeah, that's really edgy. Mitt Romney, leave it to Mitt Romney to be so edgy.
John Kasich tweeted out the piece with the message, quote, "Welcome to the fray, Mitt Romney." Now, we can't figure out if that was a dig at Mitt Romney saying, you know, it's about time, or he was welcoming him with open arms.
I think it's the latter. I think he's welcoming him to the anti-Trump side.
I can't. Kasich has to be stewing because I've heard several commentators this week call Mitt Romney the new leader of the Republican anti-Trump coalition when John Kasich has been carrying that flag now for at least a year and a half.
Poor John Kasich.
You know, Romney told CNN he is not running in 2020.
He's not running right now?
Present tense.
Okay.
It's the old thing. I am not running for president.
Elizabeth Warren recently told Steve Inskeep that on Morning Edition.
Yes,
that I'm not running for president. Now she's running for president.
They're all waiting for Bob Mueller's report. They're all sort of lining themselves up to see how bad Trump is damaged by that report, if at all. And if he's vulnerable, they'll jump in. If he's not, they're going to sit on the sidelines. And Mitt Romney's in the Senate now, so he's going to be squawking from the Senate like Bob Corker
squawking
did.
Squawking from the Senate.
And Jeff Flake did, even though, you know, they only started squawking at Trump after they were leaving office. And when it came right down to it, they voted with Trump. So we'll see how much of a maverick Mitt Romney is.
I don't expect him to be much of a maverick at all. I don't think he's – I mean, he has been anti-establishment at times in the past. I mean, as a governor of Massachusetts, Romney Care, the inspiration for Obamacare, if you will. He's not necessarily a fall in line type guy, but this is not edgy behavior for Mitt Romney.
No, he was a critic of Donald Trump when he was running for president.
Right. This is not even a new development. He's just pinning op-eds now.
But now the cable networks have two Republicans to talk
good,
to.
Good. Maybe John Kasich will be on TV less.
Maybe have his own gig and have Mitt Romney on. Anyway, maybe they'll run together for president and vice president.
Anyway, that does bring us to our final segment. A new segment will end this week's episode with Snollygoster of the Week.
Just a reminder that a snollygoster is a politician guided by personal gain rather than principle. And we didn't have to search too hard for that this week.
No, we did not. The Ohio House and Senate last month decided that they needed a pay raise. To their credit, they hadn't had one in several years, and they don't get paid all that much, really, about $60,000 a year. So a raise might seem reasonable, except they decided to use the lame duck session to attach it to a bill that increases benefits for the families of dead first responders.
Again, they might deserve that pay raise, but some lawmakers, like Democratic State Rep. Michelle Lepore-Hagan, realized it was a bad look.
It's disgusting to use families of law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty as a vehicle for pay raises.
But those State House snollygosters pressed on. They approved the bill. Then Governor Kasich vetoed it. And those lawmakers would not be deterred. They returned to the State House over the week of Christmas to override the veto and give themselves an 11% pay raise. Their base pay is now about $67,000. $500 a year. Still not getting rich, but not the best looking way to give yourself a pay raise.
The Snollygoster of the Week.
The Snollygoster of the Week.
The Ohio Legislature.
If you have any ideas for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, please send them to us at snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, please be sure to leave a review of our podcast on iTunes. All good words out there help. Also, tell your friends about us. Get the word out any way you can. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.